Kids, I wonder, as we start, if you could tell me what your favorite place to eat is. Not like at home, I mean, if you're going out for a special meal, where would you like to go? Ben? Definitely McDonald's. Definitely McDonald's. Lucy? A restaurant. Okay. Fantastic. Jacob, what about you? Nando's and Mackie D's. Fantastic. Go on, Tim. You go. Nando's and Frankie and Benny's. Oh, yeah, good choice. Have you got one you in? Pizza Place. Fantastic. Arthur, have you got one hidden away down there? I can't actually see you. No, don't worry. Well, there's lots of different places to go to eat if you want to get satisfied for your hunger. If you're feeling really hungry, you go down in your car with your mum and dad. You could go to McDonald's, you could go to Nando's, you could go to a pizza place, wherever you like. I remember when we were on holiday recently, we were walking down the street. And we looked at all the little boards outside the restaurants and think, where could we go? They all sound so nice. Well, you know, like we can get hungry in our bellies. We can have a spiritual hunger too. We can have a hunger for God. So earlier in Matthew said, "Blessed are those who hunger and thirst for righteousness, for they will be filled." And righteousness is being right with God. But where can we go to get that hunger satisfied? It might seem like there's lots of options, like there's lots of religions, lots of people that can give it to us. But Jesus says in another part of the Bible, just after he did this miracle, actually, he said, "I'm the bread of life." Jesus is the only one who can satisfy. You should run to Jesus asking for him to feed you spiritually. But why? Well, we're going to see that in three reasons from this passage, three reasons why only Jesus can satisfy that hunger. And firstly, we should say to Jesus, "Feed me because of your compassion." I wonder what you believe is the attitude of God when you're in need, what he thinks. Do you think maybe God will think to himself, "I've got more important things to do than sort out his problems"? Do you think God will get impatient with you? Like, will you stop asking for that? Well, look at Jesus here. Verse 13. When Jesus heard what had happened, that John had been killed, he withdrew by boat privately to a solitary place. There's two words there, privately and solitary. The intention is to be on his own. Hearing of this, the crowds followed him on foot from the towns. Now, I know sometimes when I want to go somewhere privately and solitary, if I get disturbed, I feel a bit grumpy. Give me some peace. Give me some space. But what does Jesus do? When Jesus landed and saw a large crowd, he had compassion on them and healed those who were ill. He had compassion. Now, that word for compassion actually comes from the word for guts. So he had a gut-wrenching feeling of love for these people deep down in his belly. We watched a program earlier this year called Race Across the World, and the contestants had to go from Mexico to the bottom of Argentina on public transport and things, and they only had the money it would have cost for a plane ride. And during that journey, one of the pairs came to Brazil, and they came across a group of street children. And they were just so shocked and amazed at what they saw that their little bag full of very few supplies, they just had to give it. They were so moved with compassion. And when in the end they won it, they actually gave half of their money to help a street children charity because they'd seen this and it caused them to have compassion. Now, Matthew often uses this word of Jesus. Why is that? Well, I wonder whether his own experience of Jesus played a part. Matthew was called as a disciple by Jesus. Jesus came to his house for tea, and the religious leaders said to the disciples, "Why does your teacher eat with tax collectors and sinners? Why does he have compassion on people like that?" But Jesus responded, "It's not the healthy who need a doctor, but those who are ill. Go and learn what this means. I desire mercy, not sacrifice. For I have not come to call the righteous, but sinners." Now, if you've been reading the Bible for a while, you know the Pharisees are the bad guys. But the Pharisees were the soundest people of their day. If the Pharisees were around today, they'd be carrying their leather-bound Bibles to the synagogue. They'd have a shelf full of Banner of Truth books at home. They'd have a phone full of sermons. They were sound. They just missed one thing. They missed mercy. They missed compassion. And so Matthew often draws our attention to Jesus' compassion here on those who were ill physically. But we're meant to see beyond that, to his compassion on those who were ill spiritually. The religious leaders of the day, they had no sympathy, they had no compassion on people who'd broken God's law. But Jesus looked on those who were ill, ill in their souls, and he had compassion. I wonder whether you really expect Jesus to be like that. I know that you know Jesus is, quote unquote, the most loving person ever. We learnt that when we were tiny. But the Bible tells us we need to have power to grasp how wide, long, high, and deep is the love of Christ. That means we can know something, but we need to know it. Same for any relationship, right? You know your wife or your husband loves you. You know your mum or your dad love you. You know your friends and your family love you. But sometimes they'll do something special that will remind you how much they love you. And that's why God gives us this picture here of Jesus seeing this large crowd and being overwhelmed with compassion. He wants us to get a sense of the gut-wrenching love that Jesus has for the lost, for his people. Many Christians know that truth, but they don't know it deep in their hearts. They think to themselves, now I've done it, now Jesus won't love me anymore. But Jesus looks on you as that crowd, a crowd that needs his compassion. If you're investigating Jesus, I want this truth to ring in your ears too. So often, when you're investigating Christianity, all the big questions come up, and that's understandable. But it can be easy to miss the big overriding message. We've got the sea of difficult questions, waves around us, but there's this great big lighthouse of good news saying, God has compassion. He has love to those who are sick in sin. Elsewhere in the Bible, we're told, very rarely will anyone die for a righteous person, though for a good person, someone might possibly dare to die. But God demonstrates his own love for us in this. While we were still sinners, Christ died for us. While we were still sick, Jesus looked out on the crowds, had compassion, and died so that our sin could be forgiven. So feed me, Jesus, because of your compassion. And then secondly, feed me because no one else can. So a problem arises for the disciples. They've got this real hunger in their belly. The crowds have a real hunger. How many of you have ever experienced that? Earlier in lockdown, we were at that stage where we had to self-isolate because of me. And we came to a point where there wasn't enough food for lunch for me and Nat and for the kids as well. So obviously we gave food to the kids. And it was the first time, I think, ever in my life that I've had to go without a meal because we just hadn't got the food. Now don't worry, we were fed by the end of the day. It was fine. But I realised then, gosh, I've never had that experience. And actually, for so many people, that's their reality day to day. Desperate for food, but nothing to eat. Well, that's the experience here. And here's what happens. As evening approached, the disciples came to him and said, this is a remote place. It's in the middle of nowhere. And it's already getting late. Send the crowds away so they can go to the villages and buy themselves some food. Jesus replied, they do not need to go away. You give them something to eat. Now remember, this is 5,000 people. I imagine what the disciples thought when they heard that. Are you serious, Jesus? You're off your rocker? What's going on? We have only 5 loaves of bread and 2 fish, they answered. It is impossible. Now why does Jesus ask the disciples to feed the crowd? I don't think he seriously expects them to be able to feed the crowd. I think he wants to underline for them that what he's about to do is utterly impossible. It's a bit like a magician might get someone to come to the front. They say, have a look at this hat. There's nothing weird about it, is there? There's no fake bottom or anything like that. They want to show that they're going to do something that's amazing. Now, Jesus didn't do a magic trick, which is still a trick. Jesus did something real. But I think he's doing this to demonstrate the disciples have no ability to feed this crowd. Now, there's a kind of Sunday school version of this story, which talks about the little boy bringing his lunch to Jesus, and you should bring all you have to Jesus, and he'll use it. But you'll notice that the little boy isn't even mentioned here, and he isn't in three of the accounts, because it's not about what we bring to Jesus. It's rather about Jesus' amazing ability to do something impossible that no human being can do. Now, Matthew needs his readers to see this too. Israel have this massive problem. They think their salvation is possible on their own. They think their works can do it. The Pharisees, who are going to turn up repeatedly throughout this section, are convinced that they can do it, that they're good enough. And the disciples need to constantly be put in the position of realizing that Jesus can do something that they just can't do. And we need the same, don't we, brothers and sisters? We need constantly to be reminded we really can't do this unless Jesus is here. You don't go to the doctors if you think you could sort out the problem at home. You go to the doctors when you are beyond your capability to heal yourself. And so here, Jesus wants to bring the disciples to the point where they realize this is impossible. I wonder if you've realized yet whether you can't feed yourself. Sometimes I think the deepest hurts, the deepest struggles in our lives come to bring us to that point of realizing we've only got five loaves of bread and two fish. We can't do this. Now we're brought there. We're brought to the end of our own capability so that we look to Jesus to do it for us. When you're coming to faith, that's the way, isn't it? That picture in Pilgrim's Progress of going through that plough of despond, that real sticky situation before you come to God. And for Christians, we constantly need this too. We constantly go to Jesus and then we go to ourselves and then to Jesus and then to ourselves. We need to see that we don't have what it takes to feed ourselves. Let's be frank. People in our area are particularly self-sufficient. I know I am, and I know many of you would say that you are as well. We think when we face a problem, we can do it ourselves. And maybe this whole coronavirus thing is there to show us how utterly incapable we are. How utterly incapable we are to feed our own souls. We can't feed a crowd with five loaves and two fish. We can't satisfy our hunger for righteousness with nice houses and cars and jobs. We can't sort out our own lives. We need Jesus. And that brings us to the final part of this story. Jesus, feed me because you satisfy. And we see that in verses 18 to 21. Let me read them again. As Peter so helpfully reminded us, this is awesome. Bring them here to me, he said. And he told the people to sit down on the grass. Taking the five loaves and two fish. Remember, loaves, kids, if you're not sure, that's when the bread's in the packet, the really big bit of bread. But still, five loaves and two fish for 5,000 people is not enough. Looking up to heaven, he gave thanks and broke the loaves. Then he gave them to the disciples, and the disciples gave them to the people. They all ate and were satisfied. They all, every single one of them ate. And were satisfied. Let's put it in a maybe a more vivid way of putting that. They all ate and were stuffed. They couldn't have a bit more. They were stuffed. And the disciples picked up 12 basketfuls of broken pieces that were left over. Now that's not those little tiny baskets. These are the massive, great big baskets that they used in that day to gather things in from the fields. Huge, 12 huge basketfuls of bread is left over, more than they started with. The number of those who ate was about 5,000 men. That's pretty big as it is. That's more people than there are in Winterley. But then, the way that they counted in those days, so they just count the dads, and that would kind of count the whole family. Okay? So there's the women too, and their children. So let's assume conservatively that each man came with his wife and maybe had two kids, which is unlikely in those days. They had massive families. We heard about Jesus' family last week, which was huge. But that would be 20,000 people. Haslington and Winterley altogether is 8,000. Okay? It's around about the size of Sandbach. That's the amount of people we're talking here. It is a huge number of people. And all of them were satisfied by Jesus. That's a picture of Jesus' abundant ability to provide. One of my favourite stories in the Old Testament is a story of Israel out in the desert. And God's given them manna from heaven. So he's rained down bread from heaven that has fed them for years. But then the people start to complain. We're sick of bread. We'd like some meat. So what does God do? He causes a wind to blow across quails, which are a little type of bird that you can eat. And the quail cover the camp 2 cubits deep, which is 3 feet, so about the size of Joshy. Okay, so kind of like halfway up me. 3 feet's worth of quail, a day's walk in either direction. Now, Tony, you're watching at home, and you've told me you can do 26 miles in a day. So that's a lot. That is a lot. Okay. Huge coverage of all these quails, as if God's saying, if you want it, I can give it to you. This is how able I am to provide. Utterly astonishing. And that's the picture here. Now, the 12 baskets, I don't want to spoil something that's coming up, but I am absolutely certain the 12 baskets is a symbolic number. 12 is the number of the tribes of Israel. It's a symbolic number of Israel. And the point here is as if God's saying, as if Jesus is saying, I can feed all of Israel if they come to me. There is enough food left over for all of Israel to be saved. Now this picture, again, it's given to us so that we've got a picture of what goes on spiritually for us. Do you remember the very first service we did when we had sent out grace and we came back here? It was in Ephesians, and it said that every spiritual blessing is ours in Christ. Every spiritual blessing. Now, that's amazing, and that's true. But the thing with spiritual blessings is you can't get hold of them, can you? It's really hard to grasp what every spiritual blessing means. But this amazing picture of 5,000 men and their families being fed to the point of being stuffed and 12 huge baskets being filled over, that's meant to give you a picture of how able Jesus is to satisfy you. It's to make you say, wow, I don't need to turn anywhere else for satisfaction in life because nothing can fill me in the way that he can. Perhaps you're investigating Jesus and you think, well, maybe it's true, but I'm not sure it's going to make a huge difference to my life. Well, that picture's there so that you might feel what it would be to trust in Jesus. He will satisfy you to the point of being stuffed with blessing. And Christians, aren't we like these disciples? And maybe look out at the crowds around us, the crowd of this church, the crowd of our community. We look around and we say, how are we meant to sort out all the problems going on at the moment? How are we meant to help them? How am I meant to sort out all the problems in my life right now? And Jesus is sat right there saying, hello, I can fill you to the point that you can't eat anymore if you just turn to me. If we ever say to ourselves, how can I be forgiven for sinning again? How can I get closer to God? How can I feel God's love in this ridiculous time that we're living in? Then Jesus is just sat waving at us like, hello, I can feed you. I can satisfy. I can stuff you with blessing. If only you come to me. And yet, how often do we turn to other things? How often do we think that the other things of life are what we need to give us that bit of satisfaction for the hunger at this moment? Nothing and no one can bring us the satisfaction Jesus can bring. He is like a Christmas dinner, and everything else is like one of those pieces of celery that really don't fill you up. That's the difference. I'll be honest, when I go wandering around town looking for a meal, I'm not fancy. I'm not looking, well, I do look at the prices, but the other way around. I'm not looking for the fanciest meal that will make me feel sophisticated. I'm looking for something that will make me leave absolutely full. I want to leave having tasted something good and feeling full. And don't we all want that from life? Don't we want something that will stuff up that hole within us, that longing within us? Friends, that is what Jesus offers. He offers such an abounding compassion that we'll never see the end of it. He offers something that nothing and no one else can give, including ourselves. And he offers something that can truly satisfy. So don't look to anything else other than Jesus to feed the hunger in your soul.